The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Lawyers of Palma Hockey Show, sponsored by Weinemann Pain and Wellness, here in the city of Philadelphia. Shout out to Matt Menark. We have a fantastic show. Jeff Krawitz, who is a fantastic attorney with Stark & Stark, is Frank Sapiro's guest. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I am doing well. Nice to see you. Nice to be back.
It's great to have you in the studio.
Thank you.
It's always a pleasure. Frank will be joining us shortly. Now, let me say a little something about Frank, because, you know, when you're not, you know, Frank likes to, he's been here since 6 o'clock this morning, but he likes to make a grand appearance. You know, what was that? That Chris Farley skit, he's been downstairs drinking coffee since 6 o'clock in the morning. So, but Frank will be with us, you know, shortly. He's obviously a partner with Palma Hockey. And we like to talk a little sports, which, you know, since, and this is a kind of a hint, Jeff, since Frank's not here, we can almost say anything we want. So he doesn't know anything about sports, so, you know,
really?
he'll get here. No, he doesn't. He's, you know, he does. He's,
oh,
he,
oh, I
but since
like,
he's not here,
some people don't.
I know, but he does. So we say whatever we want. When you're not on, when you're not here, the show's about you.
Yes.
So he'll be here. She's probably blowing red lights now. But how about that game yesterday, huh?
Wow, emotionally draining.
Drained.
Yeah, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, me too. And baseball is amongst, you know, the oddest sports because it's about momentum, okay? You know, you're going to – in the major leagues, you're going to play, you know, 162 games, right? Now, think about this for a second. Jim Leland just went into the Hall of Fame as a manager. He never won 100 games. He won one World Series. He was an unbelievable manager. My point is this. If you are going to be a great team, you'll win 100 games. That's a great year, but still means you're going to lose 62.
Yep.
So even if you're awesome, okay, you're losing 62 games a year.
Baseball is a game of failure.
It is.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
If you do something good one third at a time,
you're
going to the Hall of Fame.
I know.
If you do it 25% at a time, you might be going to the Hall of Fame.
Especially now. If, you know,
especially now. Yeah.
You know, I mean, the game is...
So, what a game.
Oh, where'd you watch it, Alexis?
I was home. I had to be home.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was anxious.
You know,
I mean,
why?
Game one was...
I'll tell you why. As professional as Alexis is, okay?
Yeah.
And as... I mean, she is astute and a total professional. Her language gets too bad for to be in the bar, in the bars in South Philly.
I mean, yesterday, yes. and the first game. Insane.
My wife lives and dies with every pitch.
Yep.
And I'm you know, like... I don't know how I did it when I was a kid. I don't know how. But I would, my wife watches every inning and then the post game show, no matter what happened. If we're
she
down not
the post game?
Yeah. Oh, we watch the post game I watch it if we win.
Win, yeah, that's what I do.
She watches it no matter what.
Wow.
And I'm going, I have to run out after that last
She
pitch.
Likes the negative vibes.
Oh.
When you lose, let's watch post game.
It's a it's a game of momentum, and you know it's definitely you know, very, I mean, you know, we had no momentum. What was your take on the game going throughout, Jeff? In other words, any little things that you noticed? Because there was one little thing that I noticed during it that gives me hope, and can I tell you what mine was first? Bryce Harper's looking at a lot of pitches. He's zoned in. Okay. He is, and in baseball, if you have that type of patience, it's so rare, okay, that, you know, he's looking at borderline pitches. Now, he's getting burned on a couple of them, but what that does to the pitchers is they know, okay, I can't make a mistake. And then they make a mistake. So, you know, it's great to see him so zoned in. And I think the team feeds off him. I mean, I don't think so. We all know he does.
I was just going to say
Well, he is.
That.
He's the catalyst, as they've called him. But focus in on the fact that that momentum builds. One person hits, the next one hits. They keep going as they were. It's so important just to get a couple on base. And then these guys know how to put pressure on the pitchers. They're stealing bases. They're trying to steal bases. So it's, and of course, you know, Harper and Casty, they're phenomenal. God. Phenomenal.
Well, and Casty, the thing about Casty is, and that drives us all nuts, is the fact that, you know, he's a sucker for the low outside breaking pitch, right? However, he took one, okay, and he didn't swing at it. I think the two hits that he had were sliders down. Okay, I mean up. They were up. They didn't really break hard, and he caught one for the home run after Harper because that ball was up. Now you would think that they'd be throwing everything low, but when he starts to show that he's not going to swing, then the pitcher only has, you know, six pitches to throw, right? And so
he's behind. He's behind Harper, so you know he's got to do something. He's got to protect that. But they're not throwing Harper anything. You know, from my perspective, they're staying away from him. But if there's a mistake, pitch, he is the best at jumping on.
Oh man, especially when he's, you know, and so it's also an odd, you know, an odd area. Here's Frank Cipriero, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. I Frank, I don't know. Did you get a chance to listen to the beginning of the show? Maybe not, but I'm glad you didn't, because
that's all I listen to.
Did you?
Your show.
I know. All day? You got the loop going? Podcasts and all?
Yeah.
Well, so Frank.
Are we talking Phils, birds?
We're talking Phils right now.
Phils.
Oh, Casty. How nasty.
Casty.
Oh, my God.
Frank, what I did was I introduced you and I said, Frank has been here since 6 a.m., like the Chris Farley's, you know, skit. Drinking coffee in the basement. He likes to make a grand appearance. But then I said, I had to be honest. I said, since you know, I know you got stuck in traffic. You know, I said, when you're not here, the show's about you. So I guess I said, what did I say? Frank knows nothing about sports.
So I try to get here as quickly as possible.
I think he said you were blowing red lights.
I said, he'll be here in 3 minutes. Right. We were talking about the Phils and you know, Alexis, she watched the game at home because her language when she goes to the pubs in South Philly is too bad.
You get tossed.
Right. At the Ironworkers bar, she's too rough for that situation. But Jeff and I were talking and Alexis about how frustrating it was, okay, up until that sixth inning.
Oh, yeah.
It
was like a repeat of game one.
Exactly.
I mean, Wheels pitched a gem. What did he have, 30 swing and misses, 32?
Mm-hmm.
Like a record.
Insane. Yeah.
It was a waste.
His record, I think, was 24 regular season and 19 in playoffs. Mm-hmm. It was insane.
There's so much to talk about, and I'll tell you, why. When you think, first of all, and, you know, I said my wife and I watched the games, and, man, I she don't even like me talking negative. And I'm like, I mean, my God, you know, I can't say anything, right? I mean, they haven't had a hit in a week, right? And we've seen, but every major league team goes through that. You just can't do it at the wrong time. Now, here's one of the things I said at the end. I posted it on Facebook. And I'm not a big poster on Facebook except for the shows, but so on occasion when things are, you know, like, you know, going poorly, you know, like, you know, here was an example when Acuna was doing the bird flap around second base. I got on there immediately going, listen, I'd rather lose the game and throw a 90 mile an hour fastball in his butt. Okay. Get some respect. Okay. I'll get on in situations like that. But I said, after we, at the end of the season, after we got smoked, I think was at Washington, and we got smoked the first two games, and the last pitch ended with a grand slam almost three feet and us losing the whole series. So I posted and said, guess what? The big talk in baseball is always, okay, the momentum stopper is the week off if you win a division. We didn't have to worry about that. We had no momentum, okay? So I was, you know, this five-game series could go, you know.
It's quick. It comes on you quick.
Yeah.
I got it. You got it. You know, we let home field advantage go bye-bye by not winning the first game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
can you imagine how frustrated Wheels was?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, as frustrated as we are
yeah.
for him to pitch like that.
Lights out.
Even last night.
Yeah.
Estevez threw, what, 10 pitches? Why take him out?
Yeah.
I'll tell you a very interesting point. I was just talking about this. I'll tell you why. Because Wheeler threw 111 pitches, and in the, I know, Frank. Steve Carlton don't want to hear that crap, right?
Exactly,
but
right.
but listen. There's a first of all shout out. I mean, not a shout out, but kudos to the Mets because what they're doing is unprecedented, right? It's not unprecedented. It looks like us. Their momentum is they're a developing team, okay? And that organization, I have no pity for. I love beating them and all that. But my point is, they're playing like unbelievable. However, that there's a difference between us and the Mets, and that is we've been there to the mountain, top of the mountain. Nothing matters to us. Nothing but winning that last game, okay? Nothing. We were two outs, three outs away, before the guy from Houston, the big lefty, hits the ball over the center field. Okay, so the Mets, yesterday they take a massive risk. They put in their closer in the seventh inning. Now, clearly, they're not thinking about seven.
Huge mistake.
Well, they're clearly not thinking about, two series down the road. Okay, to us, that's the only thing that matters. Go ahead.
Well, he's thinking about shutting down the heart of our lineup because if he gets through the heart of our lineup, they're not seeing him again before the end of the game.
Game over. No question about it. But he took a chance, and now this guy's got 130 pitches. Thrown over the last week and a half. On the other hand, Wheeler had 111 pitches. And, Topper's going, you know what? I can't go any farther. I'm going to need this guy throughout this entire playoffs. And, it's their theory, not mine, but on occasion it works. But
bringing in, it was Diaz, right?
Yeah.
Even that was a total panic move. Even the announcers were like, good idea.
Adam Wainwright
watching Sportsnet, watching our announcers.
It is
the guy who's interviewing the players in the dugout after the long balls or anything like that. Guy's horrible. You know those guys hate talking to him too.
Yeah. First of all, being a talk radio guy, I kind of get what they're trying to do on air. They're just trying to come up with questions off the top. If I hear one more time, how did it feel to run around the... Well, I'll tell you how it felt. If you got to ask that question, right? But they got to think of things off the top of their head.
What do you think about... How do you determine whether they're going to pitch to you or they're not going to pitch to you? What do you do?
I got to be ready whether they pitch or not.
Absurd.
I tell you, it's funny you mention that because Ruben Amaro said something about questioning Topper. I don't know if you saw that on Comcast about some of his moves. He said, it's my job. I loved it because it does annoy me at times, like when Alexis at Dr. Weinerman, she'll stand there right there and criticize him all day. I'm joking. Are you sure? No, shout out to Dr. Weinerman. But what I'm saying is these announcers, their home team announcers, it's all about, they feel great. It's all cliche stuff. And sometimes on occasion, it's good to have somebody sit there and speak their mind and show they're not afraid of their job. Okay. But Whitey and, when you had Harry and Whitey, every time there was a sacrifice bunt, you'd have Ashburn going, geez, he would go crazy. It was refreshing.
Yep.
But these stupid questions, at the end of the game, man, how did it feel to, hit the home run or hit the game winning hit and run over to your son? Felt like crap, man. I mean, I hate the kid and I'm just saying. Right.
I would just love to know what exactly did they talk about when they went out to the mound and had the meeting right before Harper deposited it into center field bushes.
Yeah.
Like, great meeting, guys. I'm glad you met. That worked out for you.
Right. No, I agree, Jeff.
Right. And I love when they pitch around him two, three, four. Castilla is going to make you pay.
Well, Jeff and Alexis and I were, when you were out golfing just now, we were.
I still have my golf club.
We were talking about some of the things that, we noticed during the game. And I kind of pointed out a couple things. And one is the fact that Harper's zoned in again, and he took 10 pitches. Like, he's not like regular people, man. When you're willing to take pitches and you're honestly taking them, okay, that's when you're not in a slump. Okay, that when you're in a slump like Bohm is, he's making his decision before he goes up there. Harper was doing the same thing. I mean, baseball's a game of psychology, but Harper is zoned in. He's sitting there, and the pitcher knows. He's taking third strikes that are barely out of the strike zone, too close to take, but it sends a message to the pitcher like, oh, man, right, I'm in trouble. Like, if I get anywhere near the strike zone, okay? And you're only human. We were talking about, I was really surprised that they were throwing to Casty not anything but the low curveball. Because you could actually sit there with him and go, yo, I'm coming with this low breaking ball, and I'll still chase it. Yep. But when he didn't chase it, the one, that's when the pitcher immediately panicked and said, I got to figure something else out.
And if you miss high with him.
And that's what he did twice.
Yeah, he'll tomahawk. Go on.
Absolutely. So.
And Bohm, you're right. Bohm, first time he got up, first pitch swing.
I said.
Second time, you knew no matter what that pitch was, he was taking a pitch. Yeah. Second time, right over the plate, second pitch. What, he popped up again, right?
Right.
Foul ball.
Yeah.
Why is he swinging at the first pitch, though?
It's a great,
I'm one of those guys' first pitch swing, but he needs to relax and settle in.
The way he played in game one, I mean, he was technically benched, and then they let him come in, and he did nothing.
What did they say he was? Like one out of his last 33 now?
Two out of 32.
Two out of 32, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, look, and the kid's a player, man. First of all, a lot.
He had a great season.
Exactly. But one of the things about baseball is it's such a long season.
It is.
And you could see with him, he's had enough. You know what I mean? Like he wants to just come back next year, right? But, you know.
Schwarber's taking some tough pitches, too. Like tough that were, you know. You got to give the guy sometimes benefit of the doubt. He's a decent eye. And a couple of those pitches were out of the strike zone that, you know, he didn't agree with, didn't make a big deal of. But that could be a game changer. I think in game one, they punched him out on a pitch that he watched go by.
Yeah.
Should have been, you know, bases loaded, I think, two outs.
Anybody see, probably not because it was late, but as you well know, if you get my emails, and Jeff, you might also.
3 a.m.
Yeah, 2, 3 a.m. Yeah. You know, the wife's cooking dinner. No, she's not. That San Diego game. First of all, anybody see any of that game?
I did. Oh, I did. What a game!
That team, they're like a bunch of rabid dogs.
Got nasty.
Yeah.
They do not like each other whatsoever.
Well, look at what's going on here in the National League. You got the Dodgers and the Padres and the Phillies and the Mets. I'll bet you right now, somewhere in the major leagues offices are going, why didn't we think of pairing these interdivision rivals sooner? Because it's like having two rival gangs.
Yeah, it's like two dogfights.
Yeah.
It's nuts. But that team.
We throw hot dogs. They were actually throwing baseballs.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so there's a lot going on there. But one of the things that was a telltale of the game of baseball. In the ninth inning last night, okay, the game was over. So the Dodgers threw out the rookie. He'd only had three games in the majors, but he throws 104 miles an hour.
It's like when you were playing.
No. There's only a couple of us. What I was going to say is there's only a couple of us that can hit them balls.
That's true.
Okay? But a great thing, I mean, just a great example of baseball. This guy's throwing 100 across, I mean, you know, 101.
Start swinging him while he's in his windup.
Right. Maybe when he's warming up, right? But what's amazing is he's throwing that hard, but he throws a couple pitches out of the strike zone. And now immediately they know he's a rookie and they know he's coming fat. They had four or five hits right in a row, several home runs, teeing off them. They literally, if one of the four of us was pitching, couldn't have hit us any better than they hit him.
Yeah, he was throwing batting practice.
That's right. But he's throwing 104, which means one thing. They know in the major leagues, it's why you can't have Alvarado out there. They know when you can't find a plate, and they know when you got to come fat.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if it's 105.
At 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, you could check swing, go yard.
Exactly. So when you're That when you're pitching. So you're out there a sitting duck throwing, you could shoot a gun at the catcher, and if they know you can't find the plate, you're in huge trouble. Same thing with hitting. So when you're in a slump, you find yourself 0-2 all day. A, because you're not going to swing at the first pitch, which Alexis, you ask why he swings at the first pitch. When it's in your head, you already know that's typically the best pitch.
Yes.
So you made your mind up when you go up. That's about being, that's the psychology of baseball. Then you foul one off. You're 0-2, and you just got there. Right. Ain't had a hit in a month, right? And so it's a game of psychology. But when you get in Bryce Harper's zone, now it's like Hannibal Lecter is at the plate.
And the ball looks like a beach ball coming in.
That's right. And they know it. And they're going like this. And they can hit their spots too. And they're throwing, and these pitchers are throwing right at the edge of the strike zone where they know you're going to go for it, and he doesn't go for it. And even if he gets punched out, they know they got a problem because this guy ain't swinging unless he can. It's fat. And so it's a problem, especially when they find themselves in a situation where he gets up and you got two guys on. So, you know, it's a beautiful thing, but, you know, it's you know, this is going to be an amazing playoff. The Mets are a totally different team than they were in the past. And, of course, if you get lucky enough to beat them, you know, you're going to be facing. I'd rather face the Dodgers and the Yankees rather than some of these other teams that, you know, have not won a lot because, you know, you're facing the Mets and San Diego remind me of us.
Yeah. Mets are the last team I wanted to play.
Oh, yeah. Me too. I mean, and how about when they won?
And everybody kept saying, oh, let's play. We want the Mets. We want the Mets. We don't want Milwaukee. I'm like, okay. They're the Diamondbacks last year. It's the same thing with the Diamondbacks last year.
Baseball is the oddest game because, like we were talking about, Leland makes the Hall of Fame. And you look at his lifetime record. He never wins 100 games. What that means is this. The greatest teams, now you're going to get the rare 110, 105, 110. But you're going to lose 62 games no matter what. And the rhythm, though, no matter who you are, San Diego at one point next year is going to be as healthy as they are now. And for 2 weeks, they're not going to be able to hit a little league team. Yep. That's just the way baseball is. You got to be hot right now. It's probably the reason why Boehm is, you know, because he's going through that personal thing. It just looked like he's had enough.
Yeah.
So
you're right. I mean, you always say that. You have to lose 62 games to win 100.
Exactly.
And that's a long season. Now's the time that, you know, San Diego, Mets, they're firing on all cylinders. So we need to make sure we match that.
Absolutely. And Alexis, I don't know if you noticed, he said, and we got the tape. So, Matt, do me a favor. I want you to take that little edit out where Frank says you're right. Okay?
I actually don't remember saying that.
I was going to say.
Play it back, Matt. I do that when my wife says to me on a rare occasion that you're right. I'll be like, what, say that again? I got the memos out and going, all right. We'll talk about the Eagles later. We got a lot to talk about. I mean, it was a bye week. We sure needed the bye week.
Yeah.
We'll take 2 minutes, but what are your thoughts at this point during the season, Jeff?
I'm concerned. I think there's some disarray, but I don't know. It looks a little disorganized and looks like they're struggling to find their groove, especially in the offense. And, you know, I don't know if it's the new play calling, the new system, but it just doesn't. It looks very, very inconsistent is my word.
I'm going to go to Frank. He doesn't know much about football. He'll call me during the game and go, is this offense or defense? And I'm like, Frank.
What's that flag?
Frank was a quarterback. What are your thoughts at this point?
I mean, I say it every week, every time we're here. I this is my, what, fourth year saying it. I don't think Hurts is the guy. I don't think he has that. He cannot check down to a second or third receiver. He rolls out, throws it away, or takes a sack that he shouldn't take.
Yeah.
But Sirianni infuriates me. I'm always that guy. Take the points.
My brother and I
will be texting furiously every game. When you, especially going into halftime or something, it's such a huge momentum swing. If you put a good drive together and you get down there, you take the points. And Sirianni constantly goes forward.
To his point, look yesterday. How many teams around the league were just setting up the ball to kick 45 or 49 or 43-yard field goals because most of these guys are now automatic from 49 or 47. They're taking the points. They're taking three.
It's and it's not now. It's later on. You're going to need them points, man.
you have to take three. And you look at that every game. You're like, well, had we kicked that field goal? Had they kicked that field goal? We would have won. And you look at the game against the Falcons. Saquon's great, but he's not a good catcher. He doesn't have good hands. Everybody knows that. But irrespective, whoever that guy is, you don't throw that pass. I know if he caught it, it was a different game, but you don't make that decision. You run the ball, and you give them the ball back with 58 seconds
instead of
a minute and 40 to go down the length of the field. That is a huge mistake.
Not to mention the defense has major responsibility.
You see Belichick talking about that call?
Yeah.
Basically called him the biggest idiot in the world, Sirianni. It's from Belichick. I hate Belichick, but he's right.
Jimmy Johnson said the same thing about going for it at halftime. And I remember Alexis called me up during the game. She says, why aren't they running cover two defense on this situation and taking the linebacker and making him a mic man on the side?
You hand the ball back to them with 0 points and you give them all the momentum coming back.
Absolutely.
After him.
A couple things, though, like Jimmy Johnson said the same thing. He's like, what is he not going for the points? I'm not talking about that play. But I'm not. And then you look at the defense. And then there we go to New Orleans thinking we're going to get smoked on defense and we play well. Then, of course, we're playing in 110-degree heat, which isn't ideal for Jordan Davis, and say the least. And our defensive line, like, we couldn't get near the quarterback under, and so they smoked us in a big. So we had a lot of injuries and a lot of, of course, and I'll just end it on this. Jalen Hurts is not the same quarterback that he was when he was going for the money.
Right.
Okay. And that, you know what I'm saying? Like, I loved him to death on that year. Okay. Especially when we were playing in Washington and what the hell was going on in Washington right now? We have the next, Joe Montana out there, and
NFC champions this year.
What's that?
NFC champions this year.
It's possible, man. And this quarterback.
Washington? Yeah. It's ridiculous. The guy's putting up numbers.
They are good.
It's easy to say, it's an aberration.
I don't want to jinx.
It's going to whatever.
Right. I don't want to jinx myself and all of us. And he's playing incredibly well, but everybody has a plan until they get hit. And what I mean is, how many rookies? Now, this guy may be our luck. It's a definite. Go get the money. Everything that is in your bank account and bet on it, because I'm saying the opposite. But my point is, he's going to be, he'll never have a bad game. But typically speaking, a lot of young quarterbacks start off, a really good quarterback start off this way until they understand what can actually go wrong.
Sure.
Plus,
he has a record for yardage in the first five games, right? And he's putting himself at risk a lot.
Yeah.
Running that many yards. So you never know what could happen.
Well, RG3 had the same situation.
Yep, exactly.
In the NFL, I have never, Jackson, of course, is able to run. He's like 250 pounds and he's incredible. But the point is, I've never seen a running quarterback, not get banged up. It ended Jackson's, and Jackson was, RG3 was off the, so we'll see what happens. But
You never know what could happen. It's a long season, but we need to start making smart decisions with the ball and taking the points when you can get it.
Absolutely.
And we needed that bye. And that's another thing. We were talking about Jalen. You have two of the best wide receivers
and
in the game.
And when they're
healthy, he doesn't do anything with them.
No.
It's like one, he'll look at one long ball, underthrow it, throw a pick. You have at least three. Where's Goddard? You have three guys out there that guaranteed one of them is open, but you can't check down to your third.
No question. I do think we should also have some short, high percentage passes available at all times, and we don't.
Right, and so why are you going for it on 4th and 4 if you don't have that play? If you don't have that club in your bag, how are you playing it?
Well, on that note, it looks like Sirianni's out there. Okay, we all know when you should go for it. You got the momentum. We've seen it where we're on the 50-yard line and it's the end of the game, and we're 4th and 1. And things are, and all of a sudden Andy Reid goes for it, right? Or Doug Peterson goes for it. He went for it too much, but now we're doing it. You can see he's going. Is it heads or tails? Let me see. And he's just randomly, like he's not doing it for a strategic reason. And at the end of the game, karma pays him back by having it's 15-10.
Right. If you're on a roll and you're ticking off six yards per carry every pop, it might be worth going it on 4th and 3 if you have that momentum and you have the defense on their heels. But if you run two plays and Saquon gets stopped behind the line of scrimmage, what do you think you're doing on 4th and 4? You don't have that underneath pass, and they're going to plug the run. Right. So what's the plan?
Well, it was Murphy's Law. I mean, against Tampa Bay and the Falcons, after we dropped, it was okay. Right before they ran that play, if you could sit there and say, here's what's going to happen. Here was the bad things that can happen. He drops the ball. The clock stops. They have plenty of time, and we can't stop them all the way down. They run it into the ground until we barely have any time left. That's what happened. If you were God and you could sit there and make it happen, that's what you would make happen, okay? The unlikeliest scenario, okay? And then we play, we play Tampa Bay, and it's Murphy, so our defense has responsibility in it. Let's go around the horn a little bit. Frank, as our host, if you would, remind everybody about yourself, your career, and Pond Lee Hockey.
Thank you, Joe. My name is Frank Saprero. I'm a partner at Pond Lee Hockey. We handle all of your legal needs. We're the largest workers' compensation firm in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We are available 24/7. We also specialize in Social Security disability, like I said, in addition to all of your legal needs. I'm available 24 hours a day, as you well know, Joe.
You weren't at 3 o'clock last night. I was trying to call you.
You can call me, email me, 215-568-7500. Like I said, we handle all of your legal needs. We handle cases top to bottom. We treat everything, as we talk about all the time, from a holistic standpoint. We meet with our clients, meet with their families. We find out what the best solution is for them and how we can help them best. We handle medical. We control the medical. You control the case. We say that all the time, but that's the truth. So we make sure that our clients are treating with the best doctors possible. We also make sure that if there is a serious third-party case involved, like a medical malpractice case, a motor vehicle accident case, and any catastrophic injury case, we always make sure we get it to the correct firm that we partner with, like Jeff. So, we handle it across the board. We cover the medical and any other Social Security disability. Any third-party cases, we always make sure that we partner with the best firms, and that's why we're here today.
Jeff Crawford, if you would.
Yeah. So thank you again. Good to be back. I am a partner with Stark & Stark. We are a regional firm. We have offices in Philly, in Yardley, Marlton, Hamilton, and we also have a couple small offices further down in South Jersey. We are 90 attorneys. We basically cover every area of the law. Half the firm is transactional corporate business, and half the firm does personal injury type litigation, which covers all areas from motor vehicle accidents, slip and fall. My group, I head up our medical malpractice group, and are involved in catastrophic damage cases involving medical errors, medical mistakes, both in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. We have nurses on our team in my group. We have multiple paralegals, and we, from the very first time we receive a phone call, sadly, I handle a lot of cancer cases, failure to diagnose, delay in diagnosis. We get involved. We're involved with the family. We take care of everything start to finish, from gathering records to investigating to hiring all the experts and moving ahead with litigation when we can get support for the case. And it is rewarding when we have a case and we pursue it and we can help a family and get the compensation that is needed, particularly to help somebody, sadly, when they are dying, spend the rest of their days at least with some comfort and knowing their family is going to be cared for.
And you also have, personal injury is a wide array of cases, right?
Yes, sir.
So talk about that. In other words, you handle the med mal practice, but you guys also do a wide array of personal injury. Talk about that range.
Absolutely. So again, it could be automobile or commercial motor vehicle collisions or collisions involving commercial motor vehicles, trucks, tractor trailers. We handle slip and falls, premises, whether it be in a store or out in a, a public area. We do construction litigation. Workers who are on construction sites who are injured for various safety violations, perhaps by the contractors or other contractors on the site. Any type of event that leads to a personal injury, we handle.
At the negligence of somebody.
At the negligence of a third party, obviously.
And, again, No. I mean, the two years work can work together.
Absolutely.
On a workers' compensation.
Yep.
On a third party work comp case, correct?
Absolutely. I have clients all the time that, number one, no one knows that you can't sue your employer for negligence, punitive damages, pain and suffering, loss of consortium, things like that. And the reason for that is every employer is required under the Commonwealth to carry workers' compensation insurance. And that's the trade-off. If they carry that workers' comp insurance and their premiums are up to date, then they're insulated from being sued for those types of things. And the reason for that is I always tell clients, like, let's say you have a little mom-and-pop corner store and their employee has a catastrophic injury, a shelving collapse and something, and ends up being a paraplegic. Well, if this mom-and-pop live paycheck to paycheck, they can't take care of them for lost wages, and they can't take care of them for medical, potentially a lifetime. So workers' compensation steps in and handles that. But because of that, they're insulated from being sued for punitive damages, negligence, loss of consortium. But in that scenario, if that shelving was installed properly or that there was a products liability or someone that malfunctioned, then there's a potential third-party case against that manufacturer. Or if someone's slips and falls in their parking lot and there's an outside company who's responsible for cleaning that parking lot or making sure the ice is clear and they slip and fall on that. So if there's a third party other than your employer responsible, then we can go after them. And in those scenarios, you can go after pain and suffering, punitive damages, negligence. And that's where Jeff comes in. So we always partner and we look at everything very, very carefully to see if there is a potential third-party case. And very frequently there is when a lot of people...
Well, that's part of the holistic approach, right?
Absolutely.
Let me go to Alexis. Alexis, if you would, a little bit about Weinerman Pain and Wellness.
Yeah, so I'm the director of marketing for Weinerman Pain and Wellness. We handle chiropractic care, physical therapy. We also have pain management. And starting in October, we're bringing on a psychologist as well.
So I'll be able to make constant trips there to get my,
yeah,
you know,
these
demons. Yeah,
it's actually for me.
For all of us. Talk a little bit about, obviously, you know, what Weinerman brings to the table for injured workers, okay, and, you know, injury victims, those that are suffering injuries because of the negligence of somebody else in regards to not only the services, but, you know, how they're treated and the ability to treat them.
Yeah, so Dr. Weinerman, he's been in practice for over 40 years. He just turned 72, which is crazy.
Which he looks great, by the way.
Doesn't look a day over 50.
I know. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Frank's he's been practicing for 70 years.
It's very generous, Frank. No, so he, I always say he loves what he does. He loves being a doctor. That's all he wants to do. He doesn't really even want to be involved in the...
Right, the marketing or anything like that.
Nothing. Dr.
Weinerman,
I drag him out sometimes. I got him out last week twice. That's a record.
It is a record. And I'll say that the doc spends about an hour and a half with his clients, right?
Yeah, so he spends about an hour and a half with each client. And I think it's super important because he creates a relationship with the patients. And his office is right next to mine. So when I'm in office and I see a patient walk in, and by the time they come out, they're like, they're buddies. Like, they feel super comfortable, which I think is super important in a situation like this because the patient is vulnerable and they are at an all-time low. You know, they're hurt. They're not working. They're not getting their funds get.
No question about it.
Yeah.
But also, a lot of medical professionals will not, for some reason, they won't treat somebody who was injured in a car accident or at the result of another or on a work injury. Why is that, by the way?
You know, it's kind of, I'll call it haphazard. We see it. We have clients who say, you know, I have a family doc, but they're recommending so-and-so, any type of specialist. Could be orthopedic, could be neurologic, you know. And they get to docs, and as soon as they hear that it is it's a car accident or it's a slip and fall, we don't want to be involved. You know, doctors who do this, they have to be, we hope that they'll be willing to write a report for us, give us information about the treatment course, give it diagnoses, prognoses, what the long term looks like, and hopefully give us some projection of what future treatment looks like. And there are docs definitely around who'd rather not be involved in the litigation process.
And you got to wonder who, you know, I mean, that's got to be a shock to, you know, I mean, if somebody tried to find somebody on their own, like a Dr. Weinerman, typically, you know, you go to your family doctor, it's quite a... you know, a shock to somebody who walks in and why did, you know, I've known you my whole life. What's the difference? I'm hurt. Can't you help me?
Right. Doctors like Dr. Weinerman are very rare. And this is a small community. When you have a work injury, the insurance companies want you to treat with their panel doctors. Their panel doctors are not your friend. You're not their client. The client is the insurance company, which is a huge conflict of interest. These panel doctors will literally take calls from nurse case managers from the insurance company. They'll take calls from the adjuster saying, do not get this person an MRI. Get them back to work as quickly as possible because we want to deny this claim. That's why we immediately get our clients away from these panels and get them to a doctor like Dr. Weinerman, who will be their advocate, have their best interest in mind, and get them the care that they need. If they need an MRI, they'll actually get it. These panel doctors will never send you for an MRI because they don't want to be responsible for a herniated disc. So they'll send you for an X-ray, which doesn't show a herniation. They'll say you're fine. They'll push you back to work. And a lot of people will just accept that. And when you have a doctor in a workers' compensation case on a denied claim, a doctor like Dr. Weinerman knows that he could potentially treat our client for a year or more. And that decision, if we were to lose that decision, which we obviously never expect to do, and we have the highest winning percentage of any firm in the Commonwealth, if we were to lose that case, we don't get paid, the client doesn't get paid, and Dr. Weinerman doesn't get paid. So he's willing to take that risk to get our clients the treatment that they actually need, and that's a big risk. So you'll see sometimes a defense attorney or a judge will say, oh, it's Dr. Weinerman, didn't you have them on this other case? Well, I'll tell the judge, you know what, you find me a qualified pain management specialist in the Philadelphia area who will treat my client for a year and a half, and if they lose, they get $0, I'll send a client to them, see what they do. But those doctors are difficult to find, and the judges and the defense attorneys never think of that. They send the clients to these insurance doctors. Spend 3 minutes, charge them $1,000 for that 3 minutes, and then charge them $5,000 to testify that the client's fine. Those doctors do that all the time, and they make millions of dollars a year doing that. And we need to get our clients to doctors who will actually be their advocate and get them the treatment they need, so it's difficult. And it's amazing when you find a practice like Dr. Weinerman's practice, because I can call Alexis or Dr. Weinerman, text them any time of day, and get a client over there immediately.
What about transportation and at the same time working with the attorneys to have a line of communication? So when the attorneys need reports, talk about that if you would.
Yeah, so we offer transportation for all clients. We go pretty far now, especially since we are located in Center City. That's our only office. So we've expanded to about 30 minutes if the patient is willing to sit in the car. We do Uber Health. SEPTA passes, and then if they do drive, we validate their parking. For medical reports, I'm the main point of contact for the practice. So anything you ever need, like Frank said, I am available 24/7. I give my cell phone number out, and anything, medical reports, any questions, billing,
depositions,
compromising, scheduling for depositions, all that.
So let's go around and talk about what client expectations are. You know, it's dark and stark when somebody contacts, you know, your office, Jeff. Yes. What can they expect?
So when they contact our office, and I'll just, you know, again, this is kind of across the firm, but you know, from my group's perspective. When they contact it, they are immediately in touch with one of the attorneys in the group. We touch base. We explain to them how the group is set up, and then we take them through the process. We'll then schedule another call to do kind of our more detailed intake, get all the information, and then start to gather the records. And we tell them this is how we're going to do it. We tell them what authorizations we need, how we're going to gather the records, what the time frame is. We lay it all out. And obviously, depending on when somebody gets to us, maybe we have most of 2 years to do our investigation. Maybe we have 6 months. So that changes, and
the communication and that first meeting is important.
Critical that they understand the process. And sometimes you're not talking to the person who's actually,
sure,
you know,
might be the family.
Might be it could be the family. Could be the family. Could be somebody still hospitalized because of, you know, something has gone wrong in a surgery, or something has gone wrong and they're deathly ill. So we're dealing with the family. We're dealing with children. We're dealing with spouses, But we take them through the whole process. We educate them up front on the process and on the what to expect and what is needed for our cases. We have to have experts who sign affidavits of merit or certificates of merit in Pennsylvania, as they're called, right, in order to be able to walk through the courthouse doors and file the lawsuit.
And that's so, for medical malpractice.
That's for medical malpractice.
Those cases have to be certified.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Frank, and what can somebody expect when they contact Palma Hockey in regards to representation and, you know, the whole ordeal for, you know, because obviously we know the ebbs and flows of workers' compensation. And the reason this is an important conversation is, well, you know, attorneys, you know, this is something that I've heard a million times, shouldn't be dabbling in workers' compensation, okay? You got a cousin who's an attorney that does wills and estates, you know, he might, and he's willing to help you. He's called a dabbler. And I've seen great personal injury attorneys sit there and go, I got out of it immediately. Yeah. Because it's a specialized area.
It's extremely specialized. And I'm a certified workers' compensation specialist as well. And you have to take an exam and recertify every few years to do that. And our firm has the most number of certified workers' compensation specialists of any firm. It's an extremely nuanced area of law, and there is a ton of case law and little there are minutiae that you need to know. And if you don't know it, you're overmatched. We always say it all the time. It's like bringing a knife to a gunfight. If you are not certified and you're not a specialist in this area, you're in the wrong area. And you're doing your client a disservice. I'm not saying it's malpractice, but from my perspective, you're doing your client a huge disservice by not sending that client to a certified workers' compensation specialist. So when we meet the client, same thing. We meet the client, we meet their families, we sit down, we figure out what their needs are. You know, if it's, let's say, a union worker who's been doing iron work for 62 years old, they come in, they're bent over, they can barely stand up, they can barely open their hand or make a fist. And, you know, this is a career-altering, potentially career-ending injury for them, but they're in denial because they just want to get back to work.
Like, and they might have just been messed with because they didn't want to, you know, they didn't want to make any waves, and they've been working for the company for a long time. If he's 62 years old, he might have been working for the same company 30 years.
Exactly right. And he thinks that company all of a sudden is finally, when he needs them and when he's injured, they're going to take care of him, and it's the opposite.
Well, even if they, if somebody does want to, you're still dealing with the insurance company. They don't have the same sentiment.
Right. You're a number to them. They don't care. Their only job is to not pay you or to pay you as little as possible for the shortest amount of time as possible.
All right, we're going to spit fire here because, you know, we talk sports so damn long, but and nobody really knew what was. But let's talk about the contingent fee agreement, okay? You sit here and I'll, you know, you don't have one. You know, obviously, medical providers don't have one, but it's the same situation as far as an injured person is going. Jeff, people are listening to the show and they're hearing you talk about a lot of these things, and they're going, I can't afford that guy, or Frank, I can't afford that guy. Talk about out-of-pocket costs. Are they necessary for somebody? Talk about it.
Absolutely not. When somebody comes to our firm on for an injury, and everything is a contingent fee. So if now it differs, the agreement that in Pennsylvania look a little different than the agreements we use in New Jersey. Just to touch on Jersey really quick, those the fees are set by rule, by court rule. It's a sliding scale. Again, there is no money owed to us. If we investigate a case, we have to pay experts. We have to get the records. We pay for everything. There's not a dime out of pocket.
And how important is it for people to know that you need to have a firm that has the resources to get the experts and is not worried about paying their own rent and taking it out on your case?
Absolutely. We lay out, and especially, you know, I want to say in the complex cases, we get all the experts. We tend to front load these cases, hire the experts, lots of them, and have every issue covered. That is all on us. If for some reason we hire these experts and it is not a case, because the experts call, and it happens all the time, they call and say, I don't think this is one you can take.
Well, you're vetting the case.
We're vetting the case. We're investigating it. There is a zero owed. There is nothing out of pocket. So, you know, everything is on us. We have the we have the size, we have the resources, we have the funding to be able to do it, and we do it, you know, and Pennsylvania, again, contingent fee, everything, the agreement looks a little different. The percentages, you know, work a little differently. It's not a sliding scale like in New Jersey. However, However, again, $0 out of pocket. We lay it all out to investigate and prepare the case. Only in the event of a recovery, whether it be by a verdict or by settlement, then under the law, under the state's law, we are entitled to recoup the costs and to be paid our fee.
Frank Sapero?
It's the same thing for us. The contingent fee agreement, the advent of the contingent fee agreement is the great equalizer. What that does is that allows us to go in. We're the largest workers' compensation firm in the Commonwealth. We have the resources, like Jeff said, to go the distance. The insurance companies know that we can afford to go the distance with them, take a decision, and not settle for some lesser amount than our clients otherwise deserve because we're afraid of losing that case. We will go the distance with any workers' compensation insurance company, and our fee is our clients only owe a fee if we win. Or if we win your claim, our fee is 20%. Workers' compensation is a flat 20% fee on workers' compensation benefits across the board. If in the uneventful or the unlikely scenario we were to lose the claim, client owes nothing. No costs, no fees, no medical, zero.
Alexis, when it comes to injured workers and those suffering injuries at the negligence of somebody else, a lot of times, you know, they're sitting here going, I can't, you know, does Weinerman charge out of pocket for these individuals?
No, not 1 cent. I think that's the biggest thing that, like, when my girls call and schedule their first appointment, that the patients will be like, well, how much is it?
And
is
it because they know that they can't, their personal insurance may not pay it.
Yeah, exactly. So no, we don't charge anything.
So there's no out-of-pocket cost for somebody. It's important, though, to be working with attorneys that are willing to fight on behalf of the patient and the doctor, correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team atmosphere. And in a case where there are cases where, like Frank, you mentioned that the both firms would work together.
Absolutely.
Okay, elaborate a little further, if you would, Jeff.
How we would work together.
Yeah.
So let's assume that, you know, Frank's got a client who was hurt on the job. And to use his example, there was a product that went bad. Employer had a product. The product goes bad somehow. You know, there's an explosion. There's a failure, you know, in some type of piece of machinery. Frank's firm would handle the workers' comp end of it for because the employer has comp insurance and he does what he does. We would then pick it up and investigate what was the product failure, what was the product defect, and go down that road. And if we can establish a defect, which is we can meet our burden of proof, as they say under the law, that there was a defect and that the manufacturer or distributor potentially are responsible, and then we would pursue it as a what we call a third-party claim against the manufacturer.
Importance in the communications. I know both firms are prime when it comes to, you know, communicating with your clients and educating them on the process. It can be grueling, but that's so vital. And having the resources both is the win. But now all of a sudden you have a third party case and you're working and you're bringing in another firm to handle either the work comp or the third party negligence part. Talk about the importance of having good relationships with that other firm and being professional and how and why it's so important, Frank.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical to have partners like Stark and Stark and like Jeff to look to, because at any time of day I can say, listen, I can shoot an email over and say, we have this client, he needs, you know, there was a malfunction. Or in any scenario like that where scaffolding collapses, a ladder collapse, something like that, and there's a catastrophic injury, we need to act immediately. And I will let Jeff know, I'm going to get this person to handle the medical, and I'll contact Alexis. My office will contact her. My office will contact Jeff. And everyone will work together as one to make sure the client gets the best medical treatment, and all third-party options are looked into, because when you maximize the settlement for the client, you're maximizing it for their family. And we look at it from the workers' compensation angle, but also potential Social Security disability angle, depending on the client's age and whether this is potentially career-ending injury for them. And very frequently, there's that psych overlay. When you have, you know, someone's been the breadwinner their entire life since they were 17 years old, and all of a sudden they're 62 years old in the scenario we looked at, well, that's a career-ending injury, and that's also very demasculating for at least men. We see it even more frequently than we do women over careers like that, because now they can no longer provide for their family. They're no longer the breadwinner, and they're sitting there completely disabled, unable to work in any capacity. That's a huge life-altering scenario.
Oh, no question. And I imagine when you're sending a case to a third party, it's you take it personal. In other words, that case is that other firm is like an extension of yourself.
Absolutely. It's like we talked about before. You don't want people who dabble in the area. We know that Jeff is going to handle that case, and we know he's going to handle it properly and correctly and be in constant contact with us, and we'll be updated on his progress and vice versa. We update him on ours.
We got about a minute and a half, but Jeff, but talk about when you get that situation, where do we go?
When in a situation like that, where if we get a case, we're immediately, first of all, there's a lot of information that's been obtained, you know, by Frank and his, you know, that they have already. So it makes that transition into investigating the third party claim and pursuing the third party claim that much easier. We now have a ton of information. We get it, we go with it. And we continue to work. That synergy is so important because it just helps ultimately to dot every I, cross every T, and really get the best result.
Well, I'll tell you, certainly, it definitely makes me proud to have such, you know, top firms and professionals on the program, as always. We only have a minute left. If you would, Jeff, contact information one more time for our listeners.
Sure. I can be reached by my email at my first initial J, last name K-R-A-W-I-T-Z at stark-stark.com, 267-907-9600.
And the website?
Website is www-stark.com.
All right. And Frank?
Same thing for me, pondleehockey.com. You can find me on the website or first initial last name at pondleehockey.com. It's C-I-P-R-E-R-O, but you probably will do better remembering that if you go to the website, 215-568-7500.
And pondleehockey.com. Alexis, your contact information, Weinerman Pain and Wellness?
Yes, our website is weinermanpainandwellness.com. You can contact me at my cell phone, 484-356-6666.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning into the Lawyers of Pond La Hockey Show. I want to thank our host, Frank Ciprero. Of course, Jeff Krawitz of Stark & Stark for being our guest, our sponsor, Weinerman Pain and Wellness, and of course, Alexis being on the program, Alexis Crandall. And of course, shout out to Matt Minarek, our producer. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.